Hi, and welcome to the Red Tunic Podcast, a podcast where I look to rediscover what makes gaming fun and enjoyable by having positive conversations with those related to the industry. My name is Link, and today, for the very honorable and totally not juvenile episode 69, I am joined by Gianni Matrigrano, voice actor who you may recognize from anime titles such as Gundam, Kurokuro's Doan's Island, and Tribe Nine, video games such as Smite and Genshin Impact, or basically every other indie boomer shooter to exist in the last several years. Hi, Gianni. How are you doing today?
You didn't tell him about my boob inspector license. I told you I paid $15 for that. I want that credential. Forget it. Hi. No, I'm doing good. I'm excited to be on this little interview thing. I didn't know that you were going to introduce this as a positive conversation. You were like, oh, we have positive conversations or whatever in the intro. I didn't know that. I probably wouldn't have booked this if I knew that expectation was going to be there, but we're here already, so I'm just going to run with it. I'm game to make up a bunch of answers and pretend they're true.
Well, you know, I do apologize. We did discuss you wanting the boob inspector credentials. I apologize for neglecting that. Thank you for making sure everyone is aware that you got that Spencer's $15 shirt, you know, wear it proudly. But no, really, I do appreciate you making the time. And yeah, I do aim typically to have positive conversations. I don't think I've waded too far into negative ones in a long while, or really at all. So yeah, I don't know if that even needs to be said anymore. But yeah, thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm a sog mad trash. It's time to start making stuff up. Dave Oshry's a himbo. Jared has bodies hidden in his basement.
I'm sure they will appreciate you putting that out there to all of my listeners, including my father, who pirates this podcast, weirdly enough.
Great.
You know, he's going to hear this. I don't really know how to say it otherwise. Dad, just use Spotify. Use Google Podcasts. Stop downloading them from random scraper sites.
No, keep pirating it. That's base. It keeps you in check for sure. You got to know that you're like not safe. And it's good for him to be the one checking you on it.
So I'll say this much. I would at least be, I wouldn't be so annoyed by, like, I'm not gaining anything from this either which way. So it's not like I'm annoyed that he's pirating it. It's that he gets them from a site that doesn't have the names for the episode. And he'll tell me, he's like, oh yeah, I listened to this episode with so-and-so like six times now, because he just puts them on a thumb drive and it just plays at random. And he just sees like a string of like letters and numbers, and he has no idea until he's like halfway through it, because he's a 64-year-old man. His memory's shot because he's been hit in the head too many times. So, like, you know, that's really the issue with the piracy thing, is that he just gets them from some random site, and, you know, he's listened to like the episode of Dave Oshry, for example, like 12 times, and he just goes, oh, this is interesting, each and every time.
Have you considered that this just represents a demographic that you're failing to support? Maybe it's time for you to start putting the show on LimeWire yourself.
See, but then the problem would be every couple of episodes I'd have to mix it up and make it be like Barbie Girl or some weird jank old school real media player episode of like House, but only like 5 minutes at the beginning and the 6 minutes at the end, because Real Player wasn't going to handle anything else, you know.
Controversial episode of Red Tunic Podcast, It's Rolling by Fred Durst.
Exactly. Anyway, you know, as I said, Gianni, I'm very happy and thankful that you made time to have this, like, be here for me. So I guess to kind of jump into it, you know, can you tell anyone that might not know who you are, or maybe the people that were here from the boob inspection days, you know, what you do now, so they have a better idea of just who exactly you are?
Yeah, totally. I don't do much. I'm unemployed. As are all voice actors, except for when they get. This is the worst way to introduce this. Hang on, let me try this again. I'm a voice actor, and have been doing that for a bit over a decade. This might kind of like roll into. I feel like a big common question that comes up for podcast stuff like this is like, how did you get into it? So I might kind of combine that with my who I am kind
By
of.
By all answer. Means, go right ahead.
But basically, I was about. Let's go back to the beginning. I was about 16, working as a janitor. And everybody that I worked with and all my friends and stuff kept going like, oh, you should do voice stuff. You should do voice stuff. And after enough time, I was like, all right, fine. So I grabbed my trusty, cheapest possible PS3 headset that I had originally purchased to play Mag, for anyone who remembers Mag. And that's nobody. And I used it to record what I called a voice demo, one of the worst recordings not only have I ever made, but that have ever been uploaded and called a voice demo, to the only place that I could think of, the only place that I'd ever really been online, which was Newgrounds. That's actually still up. It sucks, and I don't recommend listening to it, but you could find the old voice demo from 2011, and you can, like, hear the fan going in the background. It's terrible. And it was literally just, like, I was like, okay, because what I wanted to do was, like, cool voice guy stuff, you know, because I had spent just a ton of time listening to, like, ripped voice clips on YouTube of, you know, obviously Postal Dude, Duke Nukem, some StarCraft stuff, and... At the time, I was playing a bunch of Red Dead Redemption, and I 100% of that game did all the achievements and everything. And the Undead Nightmare multiplayer had this really awesome announcer that was like super like old school movie, like, oh, if you only knew what lay ahead, kind of like super over the top dramatic announcery stuff. So I wanted to do that. I did like a little clip of just reading those. Uploaded it to Newgrounds, got a few positive comments, and that was where my fate was decided, because if those comments were negative, I might have never done that again, but they were positive. So I say never underestimate the ability for you to like make a huge difference by saying something nice to somebody, especially when they're starting. And yeah, I just kept uploading stupid stuff to Newgrounds and collaborating with different like aspiring creators on there. A lot of times the stuff I recorded for would never see the light of day. But, you know, sometimes it was personal things that I just recorded for myself, and just little by little did, you know, these small things that sort of connected and built up over time, and, you know, looked for whatever like opportunities and casting calls I could on, you know, the various, websites, like Voice Acting Club, Voice Acting Alliance. I don't think the VAA is around anymore. Newgrounds. And stuff like that. And it just kind of, you know, for just did it as a hobby for a long time. And about 5 years after starting, I had finally been busy enough with, honestly, my real life and a real job, and also enough voice stuff that I kind of switched to just doing paid stuff. That was about after 5 years of doing it. And then 5 more years, which was a few years ago from today. I'm explaining this like, or sorry, freaking Quentin Tarantino. That a few years ago, got lucky. Some things kind of took off, if you want to describe it as that. And I was able to go full time with voiceover, which I've been doing for a few years. And by some miracle, it continues to keep the lights on. Now I can answer the question. I'm insane. Those things that took off were very, very stupid, like meme videos, and especially some stuff with just Duke Nukem saying really stupid stuff like, I pee-peed and peed myself. All right, I don't know, something like that. And that stuff kind of started to take off. But funny enough, that wasn't like that happened. Okay, a few things happened at the same time there. Because before those silly videos kind of took off a little bit, like right before, like a month or two before, My wife, Marika, a perennial astronaut on Twitter, she's an amazing artist, had, you know, I'd kind of like really had it with the, you know, dead end day job stuff that I've been doing. And enough things had kind of built up, and I kind of had enough going by that point with VO that it was like feasible that I could give it a crack as just making it full time. And she kind of pushed me for it. You know, there were just like enough things happening at the same time, especially with actually COVID, because more studios turned to remote capable voice actors such as myself, because remote was all I'd ever done. And so, you know, just a lot coalesced for me to kind of make it my focus. And then at the same time, because I had more time for it, I was also doing the memes, and those kind of also took off at the same time. And yeah, by some miracle, I've continued to do it, and working in a lot of, I think anybody listening to this would probably mostly know me from voicing in retro FPS type games. Such as Gabrielle in Ultra Kill, or Maw in Turbo Overkill, or Big Bad Cool Guy Boss Number 3 in Bloody Hell Kill Kill. and yeah, it's that I've been doing a lot of that and continue doing that.
And you know, I'm happy to hear that, you know, that path has worked out for you, and I don't want to say I'm shocked your Newgrounds is kind of where you started. And, you know, there are a few reasons for that. One, it's Newgrounds. You know, you're roughly of the age where that would line up, but also the amount of crap posting that you do. I don't know where else people would have learned it other than Newgrounds, you know, like if anyone that's not too familiar with Newgrounds, you know, you should be. One, it was a huge cultural like thing that just existed on the internet. But but I don't think anyone has ever come out of Newgrounds that wasn't effectively a solid crap poster. Like, you know, like just if you look at any of the names that are like, oh yeah, Newgrounds, like all of them, you know, like that's kind of what they've always done, because it's what it was, right?
Totally. Yeah, that's people really don't know how many of their faves are either straight from Newgrounds or have like some connection to it or inspiration that derives from it. It really is like, in my opinion, one of the most important places on the internet, and it's still around. A lot of people are like, "Oh, I remember that from back when I was in high school." But like, they're still going. They're still posting awesome stuff over there. Cool games, cool animations. There's still a community there. Tom Fulp, the patron saint of humanity, is still at the helm. And I still love that place. That's always going to be like sort of in my mind, like my creative home. A lot of what I do, I can't post there because it doesn't clear the bar for submissions. And like, they have to be careful with, you know, what they let people call content, because they don't have like the same funding and like legal safety is like, you know, Google with like various licensing and stuff. And so like, things you upload are really supposed to be like either Creative Commons or licensed to you or yours in some way. And you know, a lot of what I do is well, it's all memes, so like a lot of the assets I have like no claim to really at all. And so I don't actually post a lot of my stuff there, but I still make sure to be on there, and you know, in working with some folks there, and it's a really great place.
Yeah, you know, and like anyone that, you know, has never really heard of Newgrounds or been there and is going to go check it out, just to like kind of comment on what you said, how now they are, you know, what you do is supposed to be like your own Creative Commons, what have you. Back in the day, Newgrounds was very much a reflection of the internet at the time, and that was pure insane wild west kind of stuff. And you know, I understandably, like you alluded to, like they don't have the same kind of funding or the safety nets that other sites do, where they can just be like, "Nah, it's a meme, we'll get rid of it if we get a complaint," kind of thing. They can't, which is unfortunate, because you know, some of the funniest nonsense that, you know, you hit across can just be stupid meme, right? Like it's unfortunate that that is where it is for them. And many sites like that, that, you know, survive on content created by people that have actually good moderation or attempts at good moderation, if that makes any sense to you or anyone listening.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of good stuff on there, and a lot of fun you can have. And even as a, you know, let's say you're a voice actor, you can still upload like just audio submissions to the portal. You just, you know, it can't have Roland by Fred Durst playing in it. But, you know, you can still do a lot on there and collaborate with a lot of folks. And there's still like a lot of good to be had over there worth checking into.
So, Gianni, just to kind of roll off of that one, do you have any words of wisdom that you could share from your experiences? You know, you said that how you started with that PS3 mic, you know, how you came up, and, you know, obviously it's going to be hard to have the words of wisdom of wait for another global pandemic and have your remote setup going. But, you know, outside of that, you know, is there anything you could say to anyone that might be like, oh, I'm interested in this. What kind of stuff should I, you know, what kind of stuff has other people had to learn the hard way that they can save me from, you know,
what have you? Totally. And I mean, this podcast is a perfect place for me to talk about this, because a lot of what I do is retro FPS. And that was kind of all happening regardless of everything else or the pandemic or whatever. Because what I would say is, you know, just be involved with the things that you like and the communities that you're like a part of. If you want to make stuff and, you know, you're a part of the X fandom, there are probably other, sorry, X is in like, I meant as in blank, not as in the platform known now as X. Anyway, if you're part of the blank fandom, you know, you can create stuff and keep making stuff that is, you know, of and around that space. And reach out with other people who are of and around that space and possibly, you know, work with some of them here or there. And, you know, it being something that you're into, that you like, kind of make, I think the most important thing is always having fun. And so when it's something that you have that spark for, it's always going to stay fun and you're going to stay driven to keep doing it. And that's really the number one way to keep doing something, to keep improving and to keep sort of, you know, building portfolio and stuff along the way. And my example of myself is there was a period of time, not that long before, you know, I started being able to go full time with voiceover, where I really was not able to do much with VO. And it was, I kind of was not like, it wasn't my favorite period of time for me, where the situation we were in, I did not have much ability time to do any. But I decided that with the little bit of time that I did have that and what I could dedicate to voiceover, I would point in the direction of working on stuff that was related to my favorite genre, which was retro FPS. And so I, you know, was doing just my own little stuff, you know, sometimes some memes, and also reaching out to other people in that space to see about maybe providing VO for some stuff they were working on. And, you know, that was where I picked up working on, Viscera Fest goes way back to that time, because that was, I'd reached out to Viscera Fest, but that was, see, it's kind of funny, because the reason I ended up working on Viscera Fest was knowing Marky Music. Marky's amazing. He's over with 3D Realms now. And Marky and I had worked together a little bit when I was looking into working on potentially Diabotical a little bit. And then also the real standout example from this is I had reached out to work on QCDE, which is Quake Champions Doom Edition. By the way, if you're listening to this, it's the Smash Bros of retro FPS, and I always think like, oh yeah, we all know QCDE, but then I always see people like talking about like, oh, there should be a Smash Bros of retro FPS, and I'm like, we have it, it's right there. Apparently people don't know. If you don't know, start knowing about Quake Champions Doom Edition, amazing mod project that basically, I guess you could say, takes Quake Champions, puts it through the Doom 2 engine. It looks and feels amazing. And then it also has an incredible roster of characters from, like, I mean, everybody's there, like Gordon Freeman, Caleb from Blood, the Postal Dude, Grayson Hunt. And one such character that's there is Dusk Dude, who around the time I had reached out to potentially, you know, work with them on the project, they were looking for somebody to voice. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that I did had that sort of, you know, darker and cooler kind of tone. And so they wanted me to voice the Dusk Dude. And I did, and it was fun. It was a great time. And they posted this kick-ass trailer for the character. And Dave Oshry, of course, because Dusk is under the New Blood banner, saw that trailer that they'd put out, and Dusk Dude in QCDE, and was like, that's pretty cool. And then later on down the line, needed a voice actor with a similar kind of like cool guy voice for something else, and posted on Twitter, hey, who was that guy who voiced that trailer or voiced the Dusk Dude thing for QCDE? And, you know, everybody tagged me. And sure enough, you know, we got to working together on something that actually didn't pan out. that I worked with them, but we had a good experience, you know, and we collaborated and it was all good. And then later on from there, there was another thing that came up that he needed a voice actor for. And that thing's name was Ultra Kill. And that was kind of how that path led to that. And that's why I tell folks, figure out thing you like and do thing you like, because, you know, in so doing, you sort of build that path and create that portfolio for yourself and connect with people. And, you know, who knows what that could lead to. And if nothing else, you're at least like building up your own experience and portfolio and whatnot.
So, you know, thank you for sharing that. And like, I like that the biggest takeaway there is basically do what you're enjoying and like, right, you know, building up to it. Right. And like, cause as you kind of alluded to, or what have you, that like, you know, you're at the end of the day, you're still doing something you enjoy. So
yes,
if nothing big pops out of it or what have you, you are, you know, you're not going to be like, oh, I put all this work in, you know, you didn't enjoy yourself doing it and nothing came. Yeah. You're going to be like, well, I at least you had fun. And that's, you know, like you said, all the experiences in the portfolio and everything surrounding it. But like, the most important part of doing the thing that you want to do is having fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why and bother otherwise?
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, like I said, I did VO for 10 years before going full time with it. You can't do something for 10 years if you're not having fun. you know, it's you gotta really, you know, that's sometimes there are people who approach me and ask about getting into VO as like a side hustle to make money, and I'm like, you really can't get into it, you know, with that focus. You know, you really need to be like, hey, I'm going to do this thing because I enjoyed this thing and it's like a fun little hobby for me. And, you know, doing it, yeah, like there, I've been lucky in being able to finally go full time with it. But it's really not something like your focus has to be having a fun experience first and foremost. And I think a lot of things are like that, where in order to keep at it, it has to be enjoyable for you. And, you know, that is the key, I think. And enjoying something means you'll keep doing it, means you get better at it, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's a great way to put it, that if you enjoy it, you're gonna have that natural drive to improve, right? Yeah. Like, if you, going back to, if you don't like it, you're probably just gonna exist and you're just gonna be like, yeah, whatever happens happens, and like hate everything you're doing and blah 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 blah. But like, you know, like you said, if you enjoy it, you're going to naturally want to do better by what you're enjoying, because,
right,
you know, you're like, why wouldn't you want to get better at something that you enjoy? Right.
Yeah. And maybe one day I will get better, but,
you know, there's so many ways that could go. you know, yeah, right. Maybe one day you'll be graduated from doing the porta pod scene, or not the porta pod scene, the you know, the toilet cubicle scene to the I don't know, the actual office cubicle scene.
Hey, I got a promotion. I got a 9-to-5 office gig, and I just finished stealing somebody's lunch. Uh-oh, my tummy's starting to grumble.
You see, everyone, even Thug, can have life goals, right?
Yeah.
Now, Gianni, on the topic of, you know, things that you enjoy and enjoying yourself, what is it about games that you find enjoyable, and, like, you know, what kind of games do you actually enjoy?
I like that they make the thinking stop. I guess, you know, it's pretty obvious. I enjoy a lot of retro FPS stuff, and a lot of arena FPS, you know, multiplayer stuff, like, you know, Quake or you know, Splitgate and that kind of thing. And yeah, I, you know, it's kind of funny because that kind of goes way back for me, where I remember, you know, when I was much younger, I really, let me think, this can go a few ways. I remember specifically, when I was a lot younger, one of the, like, earliest games that I have a really clear memory of playing was Duke Nukem Time to Kill on the PS1. And Duke Nukem Time to Kill was, basically, we'd gotten it in, like, a handful of, like, miscellaneous PS1 games that we got on a deal from one of my brother's friends. I think he might have stolen them. I don't remember. but it was just in this cluster of games. And actually, it's kind of funny because, it in my mind, like, that's the Duke I think of when I think of Duke Nukem. I don't even think of 3D. I think of Time to Kill. That's, like, my Duke. That, by the way, that kind of ties into one of the other questions I saw in here, which was, like, games that you enjoy that haven't really held up. Yeah. Time to Kill, like, sucks to play now. But yeah, so, you know, getting introduced to just, like, you know, shooters in general through a lot of the PS1 stuff. And really, I think what got me into arena FPS and a lot of retro FPS was just, for a while, in my teenage years, I really only had this, like, this crap top that only ran, like, pretty low spec stuff, and I also didn't have any money, so I would only be playing, like, just, like, random, free FPS games, you know, just, like, random stuff. A lot of them were, like, Korean, so, like, I think of, like, Wolf Team, and like, Crossfire, and Crossfire is not Korean, I don't think, but just, like, random free shooters, and sometimes some cheap ones, if they ran on the system, like Unreal Tournament 99, which I played a bunch of on that little laptop. And I think that sort of, like, is where a lot of the, like, love of the stuff kind of comes from, is just because that was gaming for me. And then I just remember, like, a number of years later, I want to say around 2016, 2017, I was like, how do I say this? I believe Overwatch is a placement test. And depending on what complaints you have by the time you feel done with Overwatch, you will know what genre of game you actually wanted to be playing all along. Because I was way into Overwatch, and I was sitting there like, I wish this, and I liked the game a lot, but I remember being like, I wish this, and I wish this, and I wish this, and I was like, that's Quake that I'm describing, and it was around the same time that Dusk had come out, and Dusk did a lot to, like, reinvigorate my love for a lot of those older shooters, like Doom and Quake and stuff. And so that was where I think for me it started to really click. That like, oh, I like this genre has the things that I enjoy in gaming, in being, you know, really cool, often dumb, very fun, actiony, and just very satisfying. And also like, I think it's also like the most accessible genre in my opinion, because I think like anybody can just sit down and hold W and click the mouse whenever there's a bad guy on the screen. And so that was kind of, I think, how it all coalesced into me being like, oh yeah, retro FPS is like, that's the thing that I want.
So a few ways this can go. First though, I want to ask this in terms of then retro FPSs and whether this is a modern retro FPS or even like an old one, Duke Nukem Time to Kill excluded, even though that's a third anyway, we're not going to go that way.
He has more third person games than he will probably ever have first person games, but I digress.
You are 100% correct on that. And that is a much better topic for someone far more educated than I I think on that subject. But outside of, you know, that being the game that you kind of think back to and that being like your, I don't want to say gold standard, but your Duke Nukem.
Yes. No. Time to Kill is my gold standard. Let's go with that.
Awesome. Outside of then your gold standard, is there any other like, first person, boom shoot that, you know, is the one that you think of the most or most fondly? And like I said, whether that be newer, older, and it doesn't have to be like from when you were younger and this is the one that you hold up still or the one that you still think of from then, just in general across, you know, you, Gianni, as, you know, you are today kind of question.
Yeah, I don't know. See, that's a fun question. It's difficult because it's not Dusk. Dusk is amazing, but Dusk is amazing for being Dusk, but I wouldn't like hold it as like the gold standard. If I was gonna say Dusk is the gold standard, I'd be a lot quicker to say like Quake 1 is the gold standard. Ultra Kill is obviously, I mean, I know I'm biased because I'm in it, but Ultra Kill is really amazing. But Ultra Kill is interesting in that it's as much as a retro FPS as it is a character action game, especially in the bosses, which I think is what a lot of people think of when they think of Ultra Kill. That it's Devil May Quake, right? And that game is like, it's incredibly high quality. Like that's going down as one of the best games ever. But like, if you were to ask me like, yeah, what pops into your mind, when you say like boomer shooter or retro FPS, I would probably hear the Quake 1 teleporter noise and just be like, yeah, it's Quake. But you know, like even though, see, I'm like, don't have me on this show again because I love Quake 1 and I've played a pretty good amount of it. And it really is like the gold standard, but like, these days, especially because it's so embarrassing. I don't have nearly enough gaming time anymore. It's pathetic. I used to be a real gamer, but now when I like games that I'm like, I kind of think about games as like, when am I most likely to like actually like boot up and play a bit? And really, I'd probably be more likely to boot up Quake Champions on any given day than Quake 1, just because I do enjoy Quake Champions a lot. And arena FPS stuff like that, which is why I do the it's my not so secret motivator that every Friday I do those streams where we pick an arena FPS game and I just, you know, have everybody hop on and play. It's so that I can get matches. But yeah, I don't know, gold standard probably Quake. You know, it's, you just, you're never gonna beat Quake, period.
And you know, I can definitely understand what you're saying there, because like, my first person shooter was Doom. I'm 35. My father was incredibly, I should be careful how I say that because it could be misconstrued. My father was a father that liked computers of that era, which very much meant he slapped in a game that this is how you boot it through DOS. Good luck. Have fun. You're going to get in trouble for this. Right, so, you know, so like Doom 2 were my first person shooters, you know, along with like Duke Nukem and, you know, the poorly built Trinity and all that fun stuff. But Doom set what meant going fast, Quake set what was hyperspeed in the sense of just how fluid and how like just what kind of set the standard for how a movement shooter should work as opposed to just a strafe shooter.
Yeah, you know what? I actually see this is I'm so terrible at these interview type things. Because I know things about myself until I'm asked, and then I forget. I when I answered that, I completely forgot about Blood. But actually, I'm changing my answer to Blood because Blood is like that. God, okay. It is so ridiculous to me. I think Blood is the holiest of the Holy Trinity, like Civi said. And I really do think that it's like it was just so well done and nails so many things so well. Like I don't know, maybe Quake is on a number of technical levels a better game, but in my soul, Blood is the best retro FPS, period. Like, I don't even think about that. And God, it is just so ridiculous to me that out of the Holy Trinity, out of Duke Nukem and Shadow Warrior and Blood is the one of those three that didn't make it out of the 90s. That is so insane. Shadow Warrior's like the most racist game ever, but they're still chugging along just fine. And Blood got left behind. Are you kidding me? Sorry. I think about that so like, oh my God. Yeah, Blood, there still needs to be justice for Blood, 100%. But sorry, I whatever, continue with what you were saying. I apologize for cutting you off.
No, you know, that's perfectly fine. And, you know, I don't know what you mean. We got Blood 2, which at the time, only people that were able to play was people that owned the stupid, bloody Voodoo 2 FX card or whatever, which was, by my accounts, nobody. I knew nobody that owned a Voodoo 2 card or the card that you needed to play Blood 2. I knew nobody. My father actively was like, I will be like, he was acting like, I'm going to buy this so we can play Blood 2. It's probably good. He never bought that card because it's the game that no one wants to remember, rightfully so. But also, you are 100%. How is the least problematic character the one that never went forward in any kind of anything? Like,
well, it was my understanding that you knew your stuff, but there wasn't a Blood 2. I don't know where you got that from, but just to run a little fact check on this podcast, as far as I'm aware, there wasn't a Blood 2.
That is how history should go. Yes, you are correct. I apologize.
Actually, you know, it's messed up because there is genuinely cool stuff in Blood 2. I'm sure everyone listening to this knows the story by now about how basically they were like, hey, this is where the game is at. We need more time to finish it. And then GT just published that sample. So it's just a completely unfinished game. Totally messed up. But there is like cool stuff that they were kind of cooking up with Blood 2. It's kind of a pity. And you know what? It would be remiss of me to not mention it. I don't necessarily hold it up as gold standard the best retro FPS game, but easily my favorite. It probably is pretty obvious, but Serious Sam, that is 100% like my favorite retro FPS series and favorite retro FPS character. It's really not for everyone. Like, it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but for those of us it is for, it is like extremely your cup of tea, and it's like there isn't quite anything like it. And it's so weird, and like Crow Team just injects this like bizarre, unique charm into it. But the gameplay is really fun, and once you get into that, like, you know, battle management dance that Serious Sam offers, There's really nothing like it. Definitely my favorite series would be Sam.
So, I just to jump off of that, like me personally, kind of like you said, it if it's not for you, it typically, it's not for you. And like me personally, I've never really been able to get into it, but at the same time, I 100% have always appreciated that it was like the it didn't step away from the arcade shooter style. Like, for anyone that might not know, like around the time of Halo, like Medal of Honor, Call of Duty, all of those first person shooter games kind of stepped away from, even though they were arcade shooters in a sense still, they all sort of stepped away from like the here's 50 guns, go nuts, have fun. Whereas Pro Team with Serious Sam was just like, no, we're just here's 50 guns, and that's like we're doing it. We're doing it. Here's like bananas stuff, like here's here's a guy with a bomb on his head suiciding at you with two fists for bombs. Like, I always have respected that they took that approach, that they were like, nope, this is what we're doing, and we are going to keep doing it. And it's, it's nice to see, because there's, we kind of full circled back into that kind of era of the arcade shooter. And it was nice to see that they never let up, right? Like
Well,
they.
Sam is not gonna find an audience outside of the Sam audience. Like, if you like dramatically change up Sam to try to match the times or whatever, I think you're gonna end up with nobody. Because like the Serious Sam audience, first of all, they're crazy. We're insane. The people, the oh my God, I can't even like the degree to which people like play and master the Serious Sam games. I've never seen anything like it. But like that specific flavor of what it does, it's always gonna have the Serious Sam community that stays really dedicated about it and really, loves it and will always be down for more of it. But even, it's funny you mentioned that when all that stuff was changing. So Serious Sam 3 gets a lot of flack. And it's a good portion of it is pretty deserved, because they changed some stuff that a lot of people really don't like. Some guns had got reloading, and then there was sprinting, and it's all very
Gray.
brown military shooter. And a lot of like it almost feels like a half attempt to like recreate what was going on in that time, but within the lens of Serious Sam. Or you could almost look at it as a parody of what was going on at the time. But at the end of the day, Serious Sam 3, I really believe, is still a Serious Sam game. Like, down to its core gameplay, like, sure, there are a couple things that are changed here and there, but you are still fundamentally playing a Serious Sam game. It didn't leave that house. It might be my least favorite one, but it still is pretty solid. And in that particular period of time, like you said, they stuck with that. When like Serious Sam 3 was one of the most like retro FPS type games that came out in that period of time. They really stuck with it more than like anybody else in that time frame. It's okay to not love Serious Sam 3, but I definitely think I have a hard time being too hard on it, because it's still Sam.
And like, despite what I said, how it's not a game for me, it was very much a game that if I had a couple of my friends and we had a few drinks, it was a fantastic game. Like,
Yeah, and it always had
those.
that multiplayer, which is so crazy to me.
Yeah. And just to comment on the fact that, Serious Sam didn't kind of try and reinvent itself into like a modern take or what have you. I think we did see that. Not with Serious Sam, though. I think Duke Nukem Forever is the parallel to what would have happened if Pro Team was like, oh, let's try and make a modern, quote unquote, shooter, right? I think it just would have been as stale as Duke Nukem Forever. The humor obviously different, but you know what I'm trying to get to.
Okay, here's what I'll give them for DNF 2011. This some things that I say here may get your podcast taken down. or at least get me like absolutely hunted. But DNF 2011's greatest sin is not that it's a train wreck, absolute unfunctional piece of garbage game. It's that it's just like a kind of sort of mediocre game after 20 years of hype. And I'm going to go ahead and give them some credit on DNF 2011, which is, in my opinion, DNF 2011 is, by whatever horrible miracles maybe should or shouldn't have happened, they managed to sweep up all the glass pieces into a dustpan and get it out the door to, like, end the never-ending, like, looming curse of DNF still being, like, something to happen eventually. Like, they broke that cycle, at least, and you know, you could potentially be like, maybe dead is better, but at least it was over. And you've, with everything that transpired, and, like, with what a long, like, run-on misery that game was for so many people, you know, at least they ended it. And, you know, now, on the subject of DNF, there's that, there were those leaks of the 2001 Duke Nukem Forever that everyone wanted, and there's that mod team doing the DNF restoration project, in case anyone doesn't know, I'm also contributing to that. And they're doing great stuff, and their vision is like, hey, maybe we could take these pieces of DNF 2001 that got leaked, and, you know, try to create a cohesive finished game that is something maybe kind of like what could have been. You know, the further they get into that, the more they realize, oh man, we really don't have a full game here that got leaked, and they're having to work their butts off to try to, like, get it together. But they are, and they're doing it. And I'm really surprised at how much they've been able to do. And you know, that's great because there was so much stuff there that they had in that original 2001 build, that was really cool. And I'm glad people are getting to see that stuff and experience it now. And you know, it's so funny because part of what caused DNF's, like, whole disaster, I just saw this, I think it was bait, but I saw this post the other day that was like, showed a picture of Quake, and it was like, a time when they didn't care about graphics or whatever. And I know. And but it's so funny because that period of time, like, it was so technology and graphics focused that was a big part of what caused the whole thing with DNF, is like they had this really awesome stuff, but they were seeing even more cutting edge things coming out. And because gaming was spoken of in terms of, like, cutting edge graphics and technology, it was all the magazines were writing about and whatnot. I think that played a pretty heavy role in them being like, oh God, we gotta redo all this to try to keep up. Otherwise the game's, you know, not going to live up to expectations or whatever. And it's just, it's so crazy to see how much awesome stuff got thrown away. So with that restoration project, I'm glad people can, you know, experience some of what could have been there.
And, you know, thank you for mentioning that, because from my understanding, that is very much the case as well, is that, you know, something new and shiny would come out, and they wanted to make use of that. You know, it's kind of like when Half-Life 2 came out and people went, holy Christ, we can have physics? That right. Everything then was a physics puzzle in every game.
Right.
It's usually not that good, but, like, you know, that's my understanding as well. And, you know, it's also good that, you know, that mod team is working on that leak. You know, I wish them the best of luck. I personally imagine it's going to turn into kind of like a ship of Theseus at the end of the day, where it's like, right, how much of it is actually and how much of it is them kind of like filling in the, you know, putting right up their own like wall in between the rooms kind of thing, which is perfectly fine, because I think at the end of the day, it'll be something that people just enjoy for existing, and right, I trust they're gonna like be cohesive as they can, right?
They, yeah, I'll speak this much to their credit, from what I've seen on the back end of it, they are really, like, they are digging, and they are really digging into everything from, like, everyone who worked on Duke Nukem back then and all of the pieces, to really, like, put together, like, the most likely kind of answers for some questions, and really making sure that stuff stays to the spirit of what that would have been at the time. You know, you're definitely, you know, there's only so much you can do, right, when you have to reverse engineer so much. I definitely, that is, that they are not just sitting around going, he says, I'm going to pee. they definitely are really trying to stick to that vision. But yeah, for sure, there's a degree that is, yeah, like you said, Theseus.
And I want to be clear, just that wasn't meant in any kind of insulting way.
No, totally.
You know, in the same thing that you outlined, that, you know, you can only do so much, and, you know, at the end of it, you know, if there's some filler, that's perfectly fine. Because, like you said, I didn't know they were doing this, but the amount that they're digging, that they're reaching out, they're bugging people to try and get an idea of the best vision of what it was. That, I think, is really is pretty wild, and I wish them the best of luck in that. Because that's, you know, I don't think anyone that has any idea for making a game or programming or just project management in general can hear that and be like, oh no, that's easy, because that's a lot of work. So, like, the best of luck to that team, because they're gonna need it. That's not easy work. That's a lot of stuff.
I genuinely think that their job is harder than making a game, because, and we can move on to this subject pretty soon, but, like, the pieces that they were given, you know, from the leak, like, it doesn't, like, work. Like, they have to make it work, and it was never, like, what they have, in a sense, wasn't meant to work, at least not yet. And there's so much with the, like, tech and the way it's built from the ground up that they've had to really work through. I'm not a developer in any sense, so I'm going to start to shut up about this, because I really don't know what I'm talking about. But from what I've gathered on seeing them talk about it and stuff, is just, like, they've had to really work through a lot of hurdles that wouldn't exist if they were just straight up making a new game.
Yeah. And, you know, similar thing, I don't think there's much else to add to the topic as a whole. So yeah, like I said, they're probably working really hard, and I think many people wish them the absolute best of luck with their endeavor, because yeah, that's, they're doing something that people typically don't do.
Not me. I hope it all falls apart, then I don't have to do anything.
So Gianni, I do want to ask this, just because, you know, I usually aim to keep people here for like 60-ish minutes. As we get closer to the end, I try and wind down with less game related things ish and more about, you know, you the person. I'm horrible at transitions, by the way, so that was absolutely horrible one to go with. So, you know, as someone that came from Florida, if I understand correctly, ended up in Ottawa, there's probably a few steps in between there. I just know Florida, Ottawa, now in Toronto. I should have a question I followed up with this. I shouldn't just jump into something.
I know what you're wondering. How did I survive? And, you know, it's debatable that I did at all.
That's a good way to actually phrase it up. So I was, you know, I wanted to ask, you know, from there to here, you know, from everywhere in between and all that, what is it that you have done and enjoy doing outside of gaming that, you know, actually brings you pleasure? And, you know, the difference between Florida.
All right, sorry. No, go on.
I'll have you know, she is a classy lady anyway.
I take it back, Link's dad. Sorry, it was a joke.
Oh, they're divorced. It's all good. But, you know, the difference between Florida and, you know, everywhere between Florida and then Ottawa and Toronto, the things that you can do for enjoyment, the things that you can do to keep entertained, you know, for people that don't know, Canada is, our summer's done. It's August 24th as of recording. Our summer's pretty much packed in. You know, we're getting the winter tires on in like a week. We're pretty much done. But like, what is it that you do outside of hosting Fraggy Friday or doing voiceover work or squeezing in video games when you do actually have time? Like, what is it you do for fun that isn't games? And if, you know, by all means, if what you do for fun outside of that time is still just games, that is still a perfectly valid answer.
My life is so pathetic, Link. I don't have any. This is all I have. honestly, that's kind of true. For me, it really is largely just like work and then where I can, gaming. But there's some other stuff, especially since Toronto, because, in Florida, there wasn't much. In Florida, it was just work, and smoke and wait to die. I quit smoking. and then Ottawa's cool. I like Ottawa. I didn't move because I had any gripes about Ottawa. Ottawa's a lovely place. Ottawa's like, okay, how do I put this? It's a mild, inoffensive place. There's not too many reasons that I could say to go there, but there aren't too many reasons that I can say to not go there, which for a lot of people, depending on what you're doing, may be exactly the perfect recommendation of what you're looking for. To me, it was like, as far as I could tell, it was like pretty no BS and just like a solid place. But, you know, there wasn't like a ton going on either, even though it's the nation's capital. I always say Ottawa's slogan should be, in parentheses, indignantly, it's the nation's capital, because it's like there are so many things that are happening there and you're like, oh, this is like kind of chill and not really that big of a deal. And then it's always followed up by somebody being like, it's the nation's capital, because you wouldn't think that the nation's capital would have that energy. But like, stuff in Ottawa feels like a small town that has just been like pinched and stretched to the scale of a big city, where it's just like there's something about it where it's not particularly. I was at Ottawa Comic Con, for example, and
oh no,
it was fine. Well, I wasn't working it. I was there as dumb muscle for my wife's Artist Alley table, and I was the thing that everyone kept talking about. Really, was that it wasn't the other conventions at Montreal or Toronto. It wasn't Fan Expo or whatever, and people were just like, "Yeah, this is fine." And it was like, and that was it. So anyway, that was Ottawa. And I like Ottawa. It's pretty chill. And then Toronto, since getting here, I've only been here for about, maybe 4 months, and, it's been good. What we do is, you know, me and the wife, we kind of, work the week, and then, you know, sometimes during the week we'll pop out for a, you know, quick little jaunt around or like go through a park or something, just a walk to get out during the week. And then on the weekend we'll do, you know, socializing a little bit, hanging out with some pals. Moving to Toronto has been really cool because I actually have friends here from just the creative work that I've done online through the years. Toronto is a place where people who do that stuff are to some degree. So it's been cool to, you know, meet up with them and, you know, hang out. And then there are a lot of different, you know, bars and attractions and stuff out here. So it's been kind of cool to, you know, go out and explore the city a little bit on the weekends. And then other than that, I'm so like normal and lame. I'll chill in the recliner with the wife. We'll watch like a movie or something. You know, we don't really do anything too crazy. But you know, we get out and try to explore. You know, we just did a trip back to Florida. It's kind of cool to visit my old stomping grounds after 5 years and check up on folks. And yep, it's still there. It's still too hot. and we'll do visits back to Ottawa because a lot of her family's there. And we're also about to do a trip over to London, Ontario, because I'm going to be I'm not there in any official capacity, but I'm going to TennoCon, which is the Warframe convention. Because I have a couple of pals who are going to be there. So I just want to go say hi and bug them because it's like a couple hours on a bus to get over there. So I'm like, I might as well just like pop over and like say hi. So I'm going to do that. And then, you know, just stuff like that. We don't really, I'm not like out there like skydiving. And then a lot of my week is honestly, especially since getting to Toronto, we've just been kind of working on, you know, trying to stay regular on, like, exercise regimen and, like, improve our diet and stuff. Not that we're, like, super shredded gym bros or anything, but, you know, just, like, get healthier and dedicating more time out of a day to things like, you know, exercise and stretching and like meal planning and stuff like that to sort of take care of our bodies a little better. I'm doing fine. But you know, that you get to a point and your body starts giving you signs like, hey, buddy, you're not 19 anymore. Things are going to change a little around here. And you know, it's just like, okay, maybe I want to be a little ready for that. So yeah, it's pretty much it. And then, you know, most of my week is VO, or, you know, streaming stuff and posting the stupidest memes and takes you can possibly find on social media.
So, you know, a few things. You know, one, I'm happy to hear that you quit smoking and you're working towards your health. I think that's just a thing that everyone should be told that there people are happy to hear. Just, and that's not meant to be patronizing. So I realize I say that, I'm like, this is patronizing as hell. But just because, you know, like you said, as you get older, you know, stuff sneaks up on you. Like, you know, I'm 35. I used to be in shape. I used to be in good shape. I'm right. Not in good shape anymore. And it's already snuck up on me. Yeah, so anyone that's listening and you're younger, you just try and stay ahead of the curve, really. But you know, a few things, what kind of madman goes back to Florida in August? I would like to ask.
All right. So I can explain this one. Okay. So for my wife and I, for a while, we were long distance, and she was in Canada and I was in Florida. And that's, by the way, how I ended up moving here, because we had to figure out who was going to go to whose country. And I was kind of over Florida, and I don't really have a lot of family there anyway. And she was pretty close to their family up here. And also the idea of having healthcare sounded great. So I moved up here. But when she would visit, a lot of the times it would be like colder months. It would be January, and she would drag me out to the beach because she wanted to hit the beach because she was in Florida, and it'd be January, and I'd be like, there's nobody out here. Look, you're insane. It's too cold. The water's too cold. Everything's too cold. It'd be like now in high, but and she'd make me go in the water and I'd shriek like a little girl, and I'd be like, it's too cold and I'm scared and I'm cold, and she'd be swimming around and she'd be fine because she was Canadian and therefore acclimated to colder waters, and she'd be like, this is downright warm, what are you talking about? So anyway, now I've been up here for about 5 years. Now I'm all acclimated, but my brain didn't really think about that when I was doing the booking. I was like, oh, I want to hit the beach, have like a Florida beach day, you know, sun out, summer, bright, nice, hot, it feels good to hit the water, whatever. So we'll go in summer. And that was really stupid because it is way too hot down there. It didn't ruin the trip. We still had a good time, but I definitely won't be booking. I'll be booking colder months when I go back in the future. And honestly, now I think I'm in the same boat where I'll bring us out there and we'll have our beach day in like the fall or winter, because now I think I'm more acclimated and am ready for those colder waters. So anyway, the answer to why I booked in August is that I'm stupid. We went down to, it was stupidity, and it was also, I went down to primarily visit my mom and help out around the house and stuff. She'd been, well, it hasn't been 5 years since she's seen me. We had her visit up not too long ago. You know, she'd been looking forward to me coming down sometime, and I didn't want to make her wait too much longer. So I went ahead down with summer. But yeah, no, I won't be doing that again. It's too hot. That was stupid. Sorry. It sounded like you had more to say, and then I cut you off.
No, and you know, that's, I think what you said is very true to anyone that is used to Florida. You know, my father has lived in Florida 20 plus years now, going on maybe 20, like 25 years or so, give or take. And like, he would come down in the, or come up in like the summer every now and then, and would be like, oh, it's cold. Like, what are you talking about, old man? It's like 21, 22, low 70s for those Americans.
Yeah, for the fair.
So like, you know, I can definitely understand what you are saying. You know, I went to Florida in February, and it was, you know, it was 15-ish, so it was just 70-ish.
Barbecue time for Canadians, yeah.
100%.
Man, I remember too, because I worked private events was one of my jobs that I did through the years down in Florida, and a lot of them, not a lot of them, but a good enough number of them would be for like Canadians who were coming down to party or whatever, and every time they'd always be in their shorts in like winter and stuff, and I'd be like, ah, look at these, I can't think of a non-curse. Look at these maple lovers, eh? Trying to show off, like, oh, look, we're so used to the cold or whatever. I thought they were just like, you know, doing it on purpose as like a fashion statement or you know, to be annoying. But God, no, it really is like that. You get acclimated to those colder temperatures.
And you know, the counter to that one, when we went in February, we were on a bus, and it was, you know, it was a cool-ish night. Like, it was a cool winter, summer night for us. And Right. We're sitting on the bus, and the bus driver's like, I understand it's cold out, I'm turning the heat on. And there were people in winter jackets sitting on the bus, bundled up in the heat. And, you know, I'm sweating myself crazy in a t-shirt and shorts. So, right, you know, the being acclimated is a crazy thing. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, as someone that lives in Ottawa, unfortunately, cool. Everything you said about it is accurate. For anyone that's really wondering, no, that's spot on. It is a weird city, and I'm hesitant to call it a city because it's more like a bunch of like mid-sized large towns just jammed up somehow with like large, anyway. What you said is 100% on the ball.
Has some bomb shawarma out there, though.
I've only actually had a few places, but yeah, you know, I went to one. My girlfriend asked me to pick something up. I forget what it was. And the guy behind the counter looked at us like we were crazy because we asked for the like chopped green and garlic stuff that you're supposed to put on things as a side. Luckily, we had rice, but he looked at us like we were crazy. So the next time, have to be far more careful because, you know,
yeah,
you can't eat it alone. Well, you could, hey, but
you know, you're really lucky you got out of that not alive, but you know, without having to say sorry or with some kind of awkward interaction. You know, they don't mess around out there in Ottawa. They might have an awkward social interaction with you for like a minute and a half. It's pretty serious.
Or by the driver's driving standard, they could have just hit me, you know? but I am glad to hear that you are also getting used to and enjoying Toronto. You know, for those that don't know, Ottawa is the nation capital. It's like 1 million people across, as Gianni said, pinched from like a normal sized city, just pinched way too wide. Toronto is the like city capital of Canada with like 3 to 4 million people. It is a proper city by all accounts, is really the what have you for it. So I'm glad you are getting used to that and you're enjoying it because, you know, it's a great place.
And 3 to 4 million is really only all it costs monthly to rent an apartment out here too. So, you know, it's too expensive. But you know, it's where we got a decent enough deal with the where we moved to here, and you know, I don't know if I mentioned it, but part of the reason why I came out here, and I guess this might relate to the interview, is like I said, there's people who do the actual, you know, creative stuff. There are scenes for what we do, her being an artist and me being a voice actor out here in Toronto, where my entire life up until right now, I have still never booked a single local gig. Everything I have ever done has always been entirely remote, in my own home. Except one time, I flew out to Texas to record like one bit part for like a villain of a week in like an episode of an anime called BDX, which was pretty fun. That was mostly because I was already working with Sound Cadence at the time. It's a whole different thing. Other than that one time, it's all always been online and remote and everything. And I would really love to. It's so funny. You would think, a lot of people would think, you know, voiceover, because it seems like such a remote capable job, that, you know, everybody can do it from everywhere. And that's kind of true. But not really. The majority of the work and the heavy hitting stuff is all getting cast in these major creative hubs for America. It's LA, it's New York, it's Texas. Texas has a huge scene, especially for video games and anime dubbing, because they don't have to worry about the union down there. but there's a lot of work down in Texas. And then for Canada, there's Toronto, Ottawa, sorry, not Ottawa. I'll get to that. There's Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. And that's, it's just pretty much those three. There really was not much going on in Ottawa. I never booked or found a single gig out there. And so of those three, Vancouver would be a really expensive move and also super expensive to live there. And for Montreal, I don't know French. I'd be willing to learn, but I don't know it. And then there was Toronto, which was a super close and relatively risk-free move for us. So we figured, what the hey, we'll come out here and give Toronto a spin and see if I can get into some work that exists out here. Maybe, you know, finally have some kind of agency representation for the first time in my life and stop doing everything alone like some kind of psycho. I talk to other professional VAs and they'll be like, who's your agent? And I'll be like, huh? And they're like, huh? And like, don't listen to me as like an example of what the professional voice acting world is like. I am like some bizarro, like duct tape weirdo example who just beat his head against a brick wall for so long that eventually it started to crack. And that's it. I'm such an oddball case for getting into VO. Do not use me as any kind of gold standard. but hopefully, you know, out here in Toronto, I can find some stuff and get involved in some of those more studio-oriented agency-type stuff. And, you know, if after enough time we don't, I'll just move. I'll pop back over to Ottawa. It's like 4 hours over there, where it's a little bit cheaper and, you know, it's a totally chill place. But for now, I'm enjoying living in Toronto and looking forward to the future.
So, and that's fantastic. Like I said, I wish you the best luck in Toronto. I hope it proves fruitful for you and that maybe you finally find some representation and not have to, you know, as you said, hold your head together with duct tape after bashing against the wall until it cracks. Now, Gianni, as I said a few moments ago, a little more than that, actually, at this point, but I don't want to take up too much more of your time. And, you know, if there was anything else you did want to discuss, throw out a cool game, something else you're doing, or just something you feel more people should be aware of, by all means, the floor is yours. As well, please let everyone know where they can find more information about you, which I'll also include in the episode description.
Cool, thanks. So I'm Gianni Matrograno, and my website is getgianni.com. I'm on Twitter as GetGianni. I'm on Twitch as GetGianni. I'm on YouTube as Gianni Matrograno. I got you there. You thought I was going to say GetGianni, but no, GetGianni is the Twitch VOD archive. It's never mind, forget it. I'm doing this as early as possible. But yeah, I'm always, I guess, you know, if you're listening to this, there are a lot of like, especially in retro FPS devs who think I'm beyond their grasp and like, I won't lie, there are like, you know, I can't do every project that I get emailed about at this point. But it's more than I think a lot of people might think. I've had to do a little bit of outreach, you know, indie devs, to like let them know, like, hey, I'm here. Email if you're interested. Maybe we could work it out. Whatever. I'm not like too busy to possibly work it out or whatever. About, you know, especially if you've got a retro FPS game. I do lots of those and would be more than glad to do yet another. I guess other than hiring me for VO, I don't know, I do the Twitch where we play a lot of arena FPS. I guess I would let people know that if you are also a fan of multiplayer arena FPS, the thing I always tell people is just play it. There's no miracle coming. I think a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I want to play arena FPS, but there's not a lot of players, so I'm just kind of like waiting for a miracle game that's going to come along and everyone's going to start playing arena FPS again. Yeah, I don't know. It's been a lot of years now. I'm done waiting. Now, if what I tell people is, if you want to play, just play. You can, you know, depending on the game you pick, sometimes, like, I think, like, Quake Champions will have matches going, or if it's a game with less players, there's often like a Discord community. And then also my own, you know, Fraggy Fridays tends to get folks on some games. And I think, you know, if you're into that, I would recommend you to just play it and give it to yourself and stop waiting for the universe to give it to you. And, you know, other than that, I guess I would like to amend my previous statement about blood and serious Sam and all that and say that actually Redneck Rampage is the gold standard of retro FPS. I've been thinking about that.
You're dropping that one at the very end. Come on, that shit.
Don't make it so easy to edit out, Gianni.
You see, I could just take that and just every time a question of FPS can just put that in there, Krusty the Clown, Star Simpsons style, where it's just awkwardly, Mr. Black is my friend.
Yeah.
Oh. But anyway, Gianni, I appreciate you making the time to have this conversation. If there wasn't anything else that you also wanted to throw in after all of that, please do not defend Redneck Rampage, even in satire. I don't think we need that.
I'm not kidding, but go on.
Otherwise, I will let you get on with your evening and, you know, let you get back to enjoying Redneck Rampage, I guess.
I will, thanks. No, I just, okay, I guess I'll mention, if you, especially if you're like an aspiring VA or I guess whatever, just jump in to whatever degree that you can, have fun. You know, it's okay. If I think we get into this mindset that like, you either have to be like all in and doing it all super perfect and taking the steps all the right way, or don't do it at all. It's so easy to be like all or none. Don't worry about that. Just if you want to do a thing, just jump in and do it and have some fun. Don't be a dick around. Oh wait, I'm supposed to curse. Don't be a peepee head and just mess around with it. And you know, that's enough. You don't need to worry about it any more than that.
So thank you for the final word of advice for anyone, to, you know, maybe just take that jump. You know, I know a lot of things people, you know, can get in their own head. So yeah, so thank you for that. For anyone that's in your own head, just do it. Just take the jump. Shia LaBeouf it. Let's go.
Yeah.
But as I said, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So if that was it, I will let you get on with your evening now.
Yes, that is it. Thank you for giving me even more additional chances to say more terrible things like defending Redneck Rampage and Quake Champions. But no, I'll stop ruining your podcast. And I just want to say thanks to you, Link. This has been a wonderful conversation. You know, like I said before we did this, you've been a cool person who's around, seemed pretty chill. So I was... I know the first time you asked, I said no, because my main reason is that I'm really not good at these. I am like not good at like podcast interview type stuff. I hope that's been demonstrated for everyone today. And you know, and I was also, the schedule was a little crazy at the time, but I'm glad you circled around and asked again, especially for the honor of episode 69. I could not turn that down. And it's been a great chat, and I appreciate what you do and the conversations that you have and the way you operate this. It's all very pleasant, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you for the kind words. I, you know, that's all I can really say there is, you know, I very much appreciate the kind words, deserved or otherwise, regardless, thank you. And you know, I think anyone that's listening will be very confused as to why you say you aren't very good at this, because I don't think there was an issue at all, and I'm pretty certain everyone else
outside I rambled so bad. Dude. Okay, before this call, Link was like, "Hey, you know, sometimes there might be like a little pause after you answer something. Don't worry about that. That's just me making sure that, you know, you were finished and making sure I don't cut you off as part of the like interview format." And the first thing I said was, "Big mistake. If you don't cut me off, I won't shut up." And that 100% happened. I ramble so bad. But thank you. I appreciate it.
you are very welcome. Otherwise, though, like I said, I'll let you get on with your evening. And yes. Yeah. Awesome. So thanks again.
Thank you.
No, thank you. And it's perfectly fine. So thanks again to Gianni for making time to have this conversation with me, and thank you for joining us on the Red Tunic podcast, as well as a special thanks to Ronald Jenkins for the use of the title or music from the title track from Roads Deep. And be sure to check out the episode description for links to socials, websites, and other means that will allow you to learn more about or support Gianni and the podcast. While you're doing that, also be sure to like, follow, and you know how to the rest. Thanks. Until next time. Bye now.